Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a serial entrepreneur on the show to talk about her latest battle on TOC and why she was inspired to wake up a sleepy West Coast town with her bold culinary concepts. She is a chef, restaurateur, Food Network judge, and back this season on Tournament of Champions, it's Krista Luebke. Krista, welcome to Food Network Obsessed. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm super pumped to be here.
Well, we are super pumped to have you on. And you have the pristine designation of being the first ever Triple G Grand Champion back in 2015. How has your Food Network family grown over the past 9 years?
Wow, it's crazy. I mean, wow, what a journey. In fact, I've got my trophy just up to the left of me right now.
Nice.
as a constant reminder. It's been an amazing ride, you know, that first ever competition and taking home. In fact, I kind of feel like that was the precursor to Tournament of Champions, right? Mm-hmm. We had 16 people, boom, 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 narrowed it, and I took home the big, ginormous trophy that's about as big as I am. And since then, it's just been, you know, a series of competitions, judging, you know, growing a whole group of friends and just continually being inspired by all of the talent around me. It's been a really fun ride and a really great experience. And I'm super grateful.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you always been sort of a competitive person? Naturally?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it started just like your career in sports. Like I came up, you know, playing every sport imaginable. I was surrounded by two brothers, right?
Okay.
I played on my older brother's little league team. I was the first girl in the little league team, you know, so competition has always been a huge part of my life. And so to be able to mix it with cooking with, you know, is just like such a gift, really.
How would you describe yourself as a competitor when you're in, you know, that arena, whether it be, you know, Guy's Grocery Games or Tournament of Champions or whatever the arena may be? How are you in those situations?
Yeah, I'm scrappy. I mean, that's probably the first word that comes to mind. You know, I grew up in a family of four kids with a single mom, and we had to be scrappy in every way possible. You know, my mom, in fact, it's kind of my mom's style of cookery. Like she'd just throw together whatever was in the refrigerator in the pantry, and we'd be like, "Mom, this is so good." And she's like, "I'm glad you like it. I'll never make it again. I have no idea what I put in it." You know, and so that's kind of how I came up, but also just having a bunch of siblings and all of us kind of fighting for our needs. I think that's kind of embodies sort of my spirit when I come into the cooking arena or in, you know, Flavortown Market, for example. It's just like, I'm going for it. I'm going to run and gun and I'm going to get it done.
What is your relationship with Guy like, and how has that kind of evolved over the years?
It's been really sweet, actually. I mean, I definitely feel like we're friends. I feel like he's a mentor. I really kind of look at him as like a big brother. There's a lot to learn from him. And what I appreciate is he's such a family first kind of guy. And I'm really close with my family. And to me, I think that's where I really see similarities in our personalities. I've gotten to know his mom very well, and Lori and the boys, you know, kind of watching them grow up these last 10 years has been really a treat. And he picks on me a little bit, like I'm a little sister, you know, like I'll get a noogie like every now and again. Yeah, but I like it. I feel like that, you know, you pick on those you love, right? So I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it's all out of love for sure.
Yeah.
Is there anything that, you know, you know about him or that you've, you know, come to love about him that you wish more people knew?
Well, I think he's got like superpowers. Like the guy can soak in an ice bath for longer than anybody I know. Like
really?
He has all these hidden talents, I think, that a lot of people don't know. And in a lot of ways, he reminds me of my dad to some degree, because like he's big and he's bold and he's, you know, gregarious, and all of those qualities I see in my dad. And I actually are many of my own qualities. And so it's just fun to be around him. He's infectious, and he's got such a quick, witty sense of humor. And he has a ton of funny movie knowledge. So he's forever throwing movie lines and hoping somebody gets it. Every now and again, I get it, but I don't know. My brain is getting old and tired, and I'm not always remembering the line.
You don't have room in there for, you know, obscure movie references.
Exactly. If that was a category on Trivial Pursuit, I think he would knock it out of the park.
I mean, having been in Flavortown Market so many times now, do you find yourself going to a grocery store and kind of like taking it as a challenge, you know?
Totally. in the early days, it was just weird. Like when I would walk into my local Safeway, I was like, you'd get like anxiety. And I was like thinking I needed to like run around the aisles. And I'm like, it's not a game. And I always want to be like, you know, corner, like as I'm coming around the corner with a grocery cart. And I'm like, back it up. You're just shopping for yourself. Like, yeah, it's funny. And I still have to stop myself sometimes when I'm going around a corner in the store, like, cause you know, we didn't want to run into each other with carts. So you're kind of yelling corner, and you're used to doing it, you know, as a chef, you know,
from the restaurant. Yeah.
It's a funny thing. You have to like reframe it when you go in. But I think I know the Flavortown grocery store often better than my own store.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because we had to like really remember where stuff was, you know?
Do you ever like, I guess, treat it like a challenge too? Like, are you like timing yourself or practicing when you're in the grocery store? Are you just like kind of taking that time for yourself?
Yeah, I mostly take the time for myself. Although I also, you know, I know what I'm going for, and I go in and I get out, but I don't time myself. I do time myself often at home.
Really?
Just because I want to just stay on top of like, okay, I'm going to make a quick dinner for my wife and I. And like, I just pulled that out in 25 minutes, you know, with just whatever's in the refrigerator. I often don't go in with a plan. I'll just open the fridge and you know, find something to cook. And she's always amazed and hates that I can produce something that quickly. You know, she's like, like, how did you just do that? And I'm like, well, it's just what happens. Yeah.
Does she cook at all?
Or, she does. She loves to cook. It's funny. She doesn't like to cook when I'm there because she thinks I'm like watching.
She's like self-conscious. You
know? Well, she's like, don't tell me how to cut it. Don't look at me. And I'm just like, oh, it's fine. Sorry. But she often cooks when I'm not home, and she'll make like three soups and she'll bake and she'll do all this stuff. And I'm like, why don't you do that when I'm there? You know, it's like when I'm gone traveling. But she just loves her time alone in the kitchen. She likes to take her time. And sometimes that's like super painful for me. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of glad maybe she does it when I'm not there.
And you're not like taking like the judge's table approach to when she does cook for you, right?
Well, it's funny because she's like, what do you think? You know, and I'm like, oh my God, this is a loaded question. Like, because I can give some criticisms or compliments, but they like, you just don't know how they're going to land. And I'll be like, I think it's delicious, babe. She's like, well, does it need anything? And, you know, and then I'm like, well, maybe
you want me to be honest?
Salt? Yeah. But it's always delicious. I would have ended up there differently or would do something different, but it's how she likes it. So I'm never going to not want her to cook for me, you know? So it's like, You got to walk that fine line, you know, because she's amazing and she bakes. Like, I don't like to bake. I know there's a lot of chefs that are probably in the same camp.
Sure.
I can't be bothered to measure things, you know. I like to
yeah,
like
just scientific.
Feel, yeah, feel my way through it. I don't have time to measure. Just go in. Yeah.
Well, speaking of judging, do you feel like having been a contestant makes you a better judge on the show? And having been a judge, does that also make you a better contestant?
Oh, for sure. Definitely on the judging part, because like you really know what it feels like to have to shop, cook, plate, and, you know, get it out there in 30 minutes. And it's no joke, you know? And so I'm always kind of watching and like struggling with like, oh God, hurry up with your shop. You know, you don't have enough time. And then as soon as I see, like, I have my own rules. I know everybody's different, but like, as soon as I see 3 minutes on that clock, I'm plating. I don't care where I am in my cook. I'm starting, you know, plating. And, you know, it's just those like these little things that you learn, like when something has a little bit of time, run and get your plates, you know, like all those things. But you also know how difficult it is for them to deliver a great dish in 30 minutes. So you can have, you know, some kindness towards what they've put out, you know, but also some criticism in the sense of if they didn't really utilize the pantry that we've given them, like that's a huge gift, right? You don't get that pantry in Tournament of Champions. But in grocery games, you've got, you know, a bunch of spices at your disposal that you can really build flavor with. And so, you know, if something is lacking in flavor, you're like, why didn't you grab the cayenne or the paprika or the, you know, all the things that we know are just like freebies,
there. Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's been fun. I love being on both sides. And, it, you know, I've watched Food Network for years and even prior to ever being on it, but I've always wanted to be on the judge's seat where guys like, jump in, you know, and take the empty kitchen. Like I'm always like sitting on the edge of my seat because like, I just want to compete so badly all the time. So yeah, it's funny.
How much did all of that experience prepare you for Tournament of Champions? Or is there anything that can actually prepare you for that show?
Yeah, it's both of those answers are true, right? It definitely prepared me. I think, you know, a lot of chefs will say like, oh my God, grocery games is so much harder. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like Tournament of Champions is hard. That said, you definitely, you know, having to run around just that time crunch and the fact that, you know, with grocery games, there's always also some sort of limitation in the mix. So it's there's a lot of similarities and crossovers. What is difficult is the kitchen in Tournament of Champions, I feel like it's huge. And I'm always like searching for stuff. And that's the one thing I'm frustrated with, like, I want to get past that first round because the first round is just like trying to find your way, you know, like, where are the bowls? I swear I just saw them, you know? And you just like, once you get all that out, then you're like, okay, now I can move through this more easily. But I've just been stacked with some really tough competitors in my first round. I mean, everybody's tough. Let's face it.
Do you have a chance to go in and like kind of get the lay of the land in the kitchen before you guys actually start filming? Or is it just kind of figuring it out as you go?
No, 100% we get to. But I'll tell you, it's just like anything. It's like that giant eraser, right?
Yeah.
When like the 3, 2, 1 go, you're just like, what? Where is everything? You know what I mean? Like
everything.
Who am I? What am I doing here? What's happening? Yeah.
Well, you are on your third season of TOC, and we've had so many contestants here on the podcast who say it is the hardest competition show that they have ever done. So I guess my first question in that sense is, why do you keep coming back for more?
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. And I want to keep doing it over and over and I want to get past round one because for me, it's like, I feel like if I can get past that hurdle, then again, the path will be maybe a bit smoother. But I love competition and I feel like it's an opportunity for us to challenge ourselves, you know? And I think the one thing about Tournament of Champions, and Guy says it all the time, is there are no losers there, right? Just getting there alone is a huge accomplishment and everybody's a winner. And I mean, if you look at it, you know, by the time we get through round one, half of us are gone, right? Every single matchup that you see, when you see that bracket reveal, you're just like, whoa, I can't believe one of the two of them is going home, you know, after that first cook. And so it's just a crazy, you know, but I always want more. Like I'm not done with this game. Like as long as they'll put me in the ring, I'm going to show up and I'm going to give it my all every time.
What do you think you've learned, you know, since that very first, you know, challenge on TOC?
Yeah, I think, and it's not learned, but it's a constant reminder to like keep stay in my lane and keep it simple, right? Try not to overcomplicate it, but make the flavors bold. I think that's the maybe the biggest takeaway for me is watching now episode after episode and sort of seeing which dish wins. It's usually dishes that have like big, bold flavors. And that's not always my style of cooking. Like I like that, but I also am very much about like clean, simple flavors, letting the food and the product shine. And so I've, you know, had to sort of play both sides of that, like staying true to my style of cooking, but also making sure because judges are going to take like one, maybe two bites, right? And they're going to form their opinion. So something's just got to knock it right out of the gate, you know, and hit their palate in a way where they're like, wow. And then they'll take another bite and kind of, you know, get the layers of it all. So that I think is the biggest takeaway is that, you know, there's a lot of chefs in the competition who have more of a varied background or maybe more big, bold flavors. And you see those dishes often being the ones that take it.
How would you describe your, you know, your style of cooking?
Yeah, I would say rustic elegance, maybe. You know, again, I'm very scrappy. I love to use, you know, the beauty about being in Sonoma County, and this is Guy's backyard too, is we are just blessed with the bounty of everything at its freshest, right? From meat to seafood to produce to dairy, like it's literally all here. And I couldn't think of a better place to live and to work and to cook. So, you know, I like to let flavors really speak for themselves, but I also like to have some surprises. You know, I love a lot of freshness with herbs and, you know, lemon zest. And my flavors are much more sort of in that Mediterranean kind of zone, just climate wise. That's what we get.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, and sometimes, you know, you're also limited, obviously, by what the randomizer throws at you in this competition. What do you think is like the worst randomizer combo that you've received so far on TV?
This last one was tough for me. Yeah. And in fact, I was thinking about it too. I was like, what was my piece of equipment? I think it was the spice grinder, which is like, I mean, it's fine. It's not that interesting. And I used it twice. I mean, I'm one of those ones that like, I grew up in the, you know, the grocery game school of like, if this is what you do, you use it multiple times and you do it and you really lean into it. Right. And so that's always how I've played the game. Like if it's like last year, nutty, I'm going to give you nutty every way I know how to do nutty. I'm going to give it to you in aged Parmesan, in brown butter, in nuts, in like everything that's not a nut, including a nut, but I'm going to give it to you. Right. And so this last one was, I think, lamb blade chop, breaded spice grinder. First off, lamb blade chop is not a fun piece of meat to work with at all. So immediately I was like, get it in the grinder. And then I had one of the grinders that I saw a few other chefs use one later and they weren't performing. So like I got really frustrated in the initial part of the cook where I just was like, oh my God, the grinder's not working. I'm grinding my meat. Like, what? And then that throws you off, right? And then you're doubting certain things and then you're like freaking out a little bit. And so I felt real clunky in the beginning. And I also was kind of struggling with like, oh, we had tempeh was the wild card, which I use tempeh because my partner's vegetarian, you know, but I was like, these are not my favorite choices, but that's the deal. You get what you get, right? And you have to just think on your feet so quickly. What I knew was going to be the case was that no matter what happened, Michael and I were going to do very different dishes.
Right.
Because he's like, if you could spend a minute in that guy's brain, man, whoa, you know, he's impressive.
I think you might be seasick afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, where are we going? What's this ride?
There's a lot of stuff going on up there. And
yeah,
yes,
buckle up.
and definitely spoiler alert, in case you have not watched the last episode, you might want to pause or fast forward. But you, as you just mentioned, you went up against Michael Voltaggio in a very intense West Coast battle. And, you know, as you kind of alluded to, you were eliminated. I mean, what goes through your mind when you're watching the judges during a blind taste testing? You can't explain your dish to them. You're just, you know, watching and trying to hope that they pick your dish.
You know, it's funny. I felt clunky in my cook, but I was really happy with my final product of my dish. And the judges really liked it. I mean, to have Nancy Silverton say like, that's a perfect bite on a meatball. Like I'll take that as a win all 100%. Day long. Right. I thought I might have had it. And Michael and I talked after. He thought I had it. You know, it was really close battle. Again, the dishes were so different. I think that's one where like it's whatever the judges are like, maybe what hit them, you know, on the palate better, or, mm-hmm. you know, comes down to like one. I don't know if we were a 1 point or a 2 point delta. But I was super happy for Michael. And I was, again, super proud of the dish that I put up. So it's just one of those things where it didn't go my way. But I'm like, oh, I really need to beg to get on next season, because now I'm like, I'm 0-3. Like I went up against Brooke, who won the whole thing.
Won.
She's
yeah.
a, you know, an amazing friend. And then Mei Lin last year, and then Mei Lin, you know, took home the belt. And then Michael. But, you know, Guy gave me a pep talk before, and he's like, I think you can get this one, you know. And so, of course, I was like, I got it, you know, but then not so much, you know, yeah. it's how the cookie crumbles. But, you know, Michael and I developed a deeper relationship. I've known him for a few years, but we really had a sweet chance to get to know each other more deeply. So all of these things to me are wins, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's disappointing because you want to go on. And, you know, when I looked at the next bit of the lineup, I was like, yeah, and then I'm going to go up against, you know, Antonia, who's another friend, you know. But it's just like, again, there's no easy path to the end, right?
No.
But one of these days I'll get there.
You will.
Yeah.
I mean, do you take any solace in the fact that, like, you know, especially those first two, that you lost to the eventual, you know, an eventual champion of the show?
For sure. For sure. You know, last year was a huge blow for me. Like, I was really bummed out on that loss. And again, super stoked. Mei Lin is a force, man. But I definitely thought I had that one, just based on the dish and how I played the game and even judges' comments, you know. And so that one was really hard, but I've moved on. Mm-hmm. You know, I came back for more, but it definitely feels good to obviously see like the person I went out to in the first round, you know, in those first 2 years went on to win the whole thing kind of deal. Yeah, that, you know, but again, the caliber of the chefs that are invited to play in this game, like it's anybody's game. They're all that good, you know, and it's the randomizer that's not only the great equalizer, but really that's your competition. You know, when you step into the ring, you're really playing against that randomizer, and it's whoever cooks that wheel better than the other guy, because everybody in there is an amazing chef. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the fun of it for me. You know, I want to beat that wheel.
How do you bounce back from disappointment, whether it's, you know, in the TOC arena or just in life?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, you have to just continue to learn from these things, right? You fall forward. And I use all of these examples as things that I can look to improve. Again, whether it's like getting more familiar with different equipment that I don't use on the regular, like, you know, that grinder, for example, you know, all of these things can help get you, you know, more comfortable and get you to the next level more easily. But just in anything with life, you know, there's failures. And from them, I think, yeah, you can sit with it for a little while and be upset. Great. But then you have to move on and you have to look at how can you be better in the next move of whatever it is you're doing. You know, I just shut one of my restaurants. This is a first for me. And it wasn't failing. It just wasn't like, I wasn't feeling excited about it anymore. And I was feeling kind of stuck creatively. And so it was like, it was time, you know, and you have to learn and then figure out how to, you know, how to succeed in the next venture.
Coming up next, Krista talks about what it was like growing up in a restaurant family and why she left the corporate world behind to start her own business.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Speaking of your restaurants and your little empire that you've built in your corner of Sonoma County, you know, I want to kind of go back a little bit because before landing on television, you know, you were essentially born into this business. You kind of talked earlier about your mom and just like how she would kind of scrap together family meals. And it sounds like your love of food kind of started there at an early age. What was it like growing up, you know, in a family that really does celebrate food?
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. You know, I still talk of my early memories as a kid, like, you know, I grew up in Wisconsin, so the rules are different there. Let's just start with that. They have to-go cocktails, which is kind of great. But, you know, standing on a milk crate behind the bar at like 5 years old, like making a grasshopper or a pink squirrel, you know, in the bar, like that was okay to have a kid not only in the bar, but behind the bar. But that's a whole other story. Yeah, totally.
I'm from Montana, so I feel like I can kind of relate.
Yeah, you can relate. But, you know, growing up in the restaurant, like we were always there, whether we were helping clean the restaurant or, you know, I started bussing tables at like 13 in my mom's restaurant. But it's just been a constant journey and it's always been a part of my life. So much so that my mom was like, you need to not do this as a profession. Like, why can't you just stay in the corporate lane? And I was like, because this is not what is making me happy. You know, so growing up in it, it was always a big deal for us. And holidays and sharing food and breaking bread together is super important to me because I feel like this is how food connects people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's about sharing a meal and sharing stories. And those stories create, in my opinion, you know, these memories that make that dish. Maybe the dish wasn't that great, but it's the whole experience and the setting and all of that that makes you remember it so fondly. Like one of my favorite dishes is like my grandma's pot roast and mashed potatoes with a super dark brown gravy, which maybe came from a package. I don't know, but it was delicious. And it's like that final meal I want, you know, like, you know, when they say, what's your final meal? I'm like, pot roast and mashed potatoes. Like, that's it for me, you know? Yeah. I mean, I love it. It's one of those things where like it's once it's in your blood, you can't get it out. And it's what makes me happy. And I cook on my days off, you know, I mean, I just love doing it. And I love sharing that with people and connecting with people through food.
I mean, you kind of alluded to this as well, that you had this passion, obviously, for food and cooking, but you didn't necessarily follow that right away. You did go the corporate route initially. So like what changed?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a lot of careers, so that's aging me a little bit. And I've been doing this now for 15 years. So what changed was that I wanted a lifestyle career. I wanted something that I felt more passionate about. And, you know, just like doing the sales thing just wasn't it for me. Like what I loved about that was, again, connecting with people and creating relationships. And so I was a relationship seller. I was in biotechnology for over a decade. And it was to the point where I got, you know, high enough on the food chain that all my job was going to be was sitting behind a computer and a desk and crunching numbers and making sales quotas. And that was not where I wanted to be. So I thought, how do I do something? How do I do this differently? How do I live life differently? And funny enough, it was like my dog, which I never thought I would get a dog, who inspired me. His name was Boone. And Aww. Boone means a gift or a blessing. And what happened was I was leaving for a sales meeting, you know, for like a week away. And I cried about the dog. Like, I was like, I'm going to miss the dog. And I was like, I need a life where like, I can just be, do my thing and be home and, you know, be outdoors. And so the hotel started first. And then I was like, okay, now I want the restaurant. And the restaurant came, you know, a year after. So it's been a fun, interesting journey for sure.
And all of this is taking place in a, you know, kind of sleepy town, Guerneville, California, a couple hours north of San Francisco, wine country. And you've kind of, you know, not only had the hotel and the restaurant, you've a deli, a cocktail bar, multiple restaurants. Why is this town so special to you? And why did it pull you for this big change?
It's a fun little town. You know, it's been a bustling town since like the early like 1950s, right? It was this place where families from San Francisco all over the Bay Area would come in summer. And so it was very much this summer destination. And it's changed, you know, over the decades. You know, in the 70s, all the hippies were here. In the 80s, it really became a queer destination. So it's had this like this really amazing tapestry of all these, you know, different things that it's been. But what it is still is a very big melting pot of diversity. And that's what I love. I also love that its proximity to the coast is 20 minutes. It's right on a river. The Redwoods are literally a mile from my hotel property. So that's my backyard, my gym, if you will. You know, it's close to San Francisco and the arts. And so it's like perfectly situated. And at the time when I was looking to do this, it was also affordable. Like I didn't want to have, I know I'm not real great answering to other people, which is why I'm my own boss. And so I didn't want to have a lot of investors when I first started. And so it was like, okay, all the stars aligned and Guerneville became the place. And now that I'm here, it's just like, it's such a magical place to be. And so funny enough, I wanted to create all these other things because that way I didn't have to really leave town. So like, oh, we have a great little deli and how about a craft cocktail bar and, you know. And so it just kind of evolved like that. But I've since sold the market in Delhi years ago, maybe 6 years ago, and the cocktail bar about 2 years ago to dear friends. And because I feel like it takes a village, right? And as much as I loved birthing these things, now, you know, someone else can put their love and their energy and their spin on it. And it allows me the ability to have, you know, more creative space to do what I want to do next. Cause I'm like a serial entrepreneur.
Is the biscuit mix still available at the market? That's the question.
Believe it is. So the market was again, recently sold to one of my old GMs who really wanted to have her own thing. And so she took it and now it is called Picnic Town Market. It's very cute. And I think she still sells the biscuit mix or you can get it online. But I know the recipe, so.
So you don't need the biscuit mix, but maybe other people do.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, by the way. But
you talk about, you know, being an entrepreneur and kind of a serial entrepreneur at that. What is the most valuable lesson you can share from your time doing that?
Never stop learning and don't think you know it all. I think for me, it's really surrounding myself with talented people. Because, you know, as a business owner, there's so many hats you have to wear, but you just can't do everything. So the ability to have and surround yourself with people who are smarter than you at certain things and lean into their expertise and let them lead. You know, I'm a real visionary and a creative and have all these ideas, but there's no way I could do it all without the team of people that I have in place. And so it's that constant learning and constantly, you know, seeking new knowledge and trying new things that to me, I think is invaluable.
As you mentioned, you are this creative mind as well. I think a lot of chefs are, but you also, you know, you are there with the look, the feel, the branding of all of these concepts that you've kind of brought to life. Where do you find that creative inspiration from?
Yeah, that's a great question. I grew up, my mom actually had an interior design background, as did my aunt and my godmother. So as a younger kid, I spent a lot of time in the design studio, even if it meant like having to put away fabric, you know, books and things like this. And so I try to just take inspiration from the outdoors, you know, cool things I see, signage, eating at other restaurants and sort of like taking it and then saying like, oh, how could I make that dish differently? Like, I like these ingredients. What's my spin on it? And just sort of like, I'm a huge fan of like clean, simple design and then trying to find ways to sort of like punch it up or, you know, make it interesting and sexy. But it's always generally a pretty chill color palette. Like I have a hard time like throwing pops of color. I love neutral stuff. Like it just has a more calming feel. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in my restaurant right now because I love the design so much, but I have to redo it for the new concept.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, what do I do? Because it was so good, you know?
You're like, how do I top this?
Yeah. So, you know, I've changed out the lighting. I've changed out the seating. Now I'm trying to figure out like this really fun graphic for the wall. So I'm like sitting in here and like stewing in it a little bit. Because like I've got 6 weeks until I'm opening and my painter is like, what's it going to be? And I'm like, I'll send it to you on a napkin later today. It's going to be great.
Well, what is the new concept? Can you share?
I can. Yeah. It's funny. I've like not said the name because I was toying with like different names, but the concept is going to be doing like global street food because I just don't want to be stuck in a lane. Like I'm constantly inspired when I travel of all these different flavors and how to categorize them into one restaurant concept just was like, I can't do it other than to do this. And so the new name is going to be called Road Trip.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And so I have a movie projector that puts movies on the back wall and I'm going to be sort of reeling through like Thelma and Louise, National Lampoon's, like Tommy Boy, you know, Smokey and the Bandit. So these will kind of spin on the back wall as, you know, people can kind of see and tune in and giggle. But yeah, I want to have a very fun, playful, super approachable menu. You know, the thing is we're generally a vacation destination. So people are coming in for a weekend and I feel like, you know, they don't want to think about it. They just want to look at a menu and be like, oh, that looks delicious. That's easy, you know? And so that's what I'm going to hit them with, like right over the head. Come in, come one, come all. Yeah.
It never stops, right?
No, I mean... no, it never stops.
So is there any other projects on the horizon besides that one? Or is that kind of taking up all your time right now?
That's taking up the majority of my time. And then I'm trying to do some refresh on my hotel property because I bought another hotel about 2.5 years ago and I did a full renovation on that. And so now I'm feeling like my OG property needs some love. And that's hard because it's really busy. So trying to renovate bathrooms and, you know, do these refreshes takes inventory out of pocket. And so it's a hard one to try to schedule all that and, you know, sourcing tile and figuring out new glass panels. And, you know, so I spend a lot of time doing that. And so once the restaurant is up and rolling and I'm feeling good, which is we're opening hopefully early April, then I'll dive, you know, in and kind of simultaneously be working on a little bit of the renovations of the new one. But I'm also still looking for another hotel. That's the next new thing. Restaurants are hard, man. Restaurants are real hard.
Do you like doing the hotels better or is just different?
It's different. And I think what, you know, one of the things that came out of the pandemic, which is so long ago now, but still seems so near, is that, you know, staffing and cost of goods and all of these things make being a restaurateur really challenging, especially as a, you know, kind of sole proprietor, mom and pop style of thing. The margins are really lean and particularly more so, I think, in seasonal towns where like we have to crush it in the summer and then we lose money in the winter and you hope to just stay above water. Mm. And staffing is really difficult. You know, staffing, I think, and all of us can share in that is the biggest challenge. So with the hotel, I can still play in that food and beverage space in a smaller scale to offer, you know, offerings for my guests, but my team can wear many hats. Whereas in a restaurant, they're a chef, a cook, a server, like they're wearing that one hat. Mm-hmm. In a hotel, like my person who checks them in can also be my bar person, right? They can shake a beautiful cocktail and, you know, they can, you know, be the concierge at the front desk. And so it's a little easier from a staffing perspective. And also it's for me, again, it's a real estate play. I own those properties, whereas I'm leasing restaurant space. And so it's a long, long game and I'm in for the long game. But I also love the ability to curate an experience for a guest for a longer period of time, right? I have you in the restaurant, I have you for a meal and then off you go. When I have you for a weekend, I'm curating that entire experience, that stay from the minute you check in to the minute you leave. And I just love that aspect of hospitality.
Yeah. I mean, as you look back at the last, you know, 15 years and as you kind of look ahead to the next, I don't know, 15 years, what are you most proud of just in terms of what you've brought to that community and really made it your own?
Yeah.
Your home.
I think maybe the team of people that I've built with me. And, you know, I really try to help them, you know, grow as well, if not with me, to grow in their own careers. And yeah, I think job creation was a big one, because the community when I came in 2007 was, you know, that was when the economy was just tanking and it was really sleepy here. And so, you know, I started obviously with the restaurant or the hotel and then the restaurant. And, you know, when I look now and I see I have over 50 employees, you know, just me, it's just, it feels really exciting to have like grown this part of the community. And yeah, it feels really special. Like I love my quirky little town.
Well, you have a lot to be proud of, and it was so lovely, you know, hearing your story, and we wish you continued luck in the Tournament of Champions arena.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
They'll invite you back, but we are going to finish things off with a little rapid fire round, and then we have one final question for you.
Okay.
All right. Your favorite travel destination?
Ooh, I'm going to say the Italian coast. Mm. Both the north and the south are spectacular.
Great choice. Late night snack of choice?
It's going to be weird, but gummy bears.
Oh, okay. I mean, I love gummy bears. So.
Yeah. What's your favorite? What's your favorite color?
Favorite color. I actually like, I don't even know. Is it pineapple? Like the white one?
The white one. Mine too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great mind.
You're going to have to get your own bag if you come okay. over. We're not sharing.
Fair enough. I'll bring a bunch.
Okay.
Day off routine
starts with coffee, generally a hike or some form of exercise. Typically laundry and catching up on the rest of my life that I don't get to do on a normal work day.
Fair. One word to describe you as a leader.
Is hands-on one word, like with a hyphen?
I think that's like, we'll allow it. We'll accept it.
Dedicated. How about that? Dedicated. We'll go with that.
All right. Bucket list item you're checking off soon.
I just did a few.
Okay. Well, then let's do that. What are some that you just checked off?
Peru. Like I did 2 weeks on my own in Peru, and I hit four of the 50 top restaurants in the world.
Wow.
Number one, number six, number 28, number 47. It was incredible. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But Japan is next. I just don't know how soon. So I got a lot to do.
It's on. You're going to put it out there into the universe and make
That's
it happen.
Right.
What would the title of your memoir be?
Bold, More Than Flavor.
I like that. That ties back to our previous conversation about Tournament of Champions as well.
Yes.
So, all right. Last question is not rapid fire. You can take as long as you want on this. There are no rules. And we're just asking, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So just take us through breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can travel, time travel, you know, you can do whatever you want for it. This is your day.
How much time do we have? Just kidding.
as much as you want. How much time do you have?
Okay, great. This is a very long podcast today, folks. Settle in.
Buckle in.
Get another cup of tea. So starts with like the perfect breakfast for me is like poached eggs, beautiful like toast with avocados. Simple. I'm not like, I don't like to get real heavy in the early part of the day, but coffee, black. Just really good coffee, black, and a mimosa, but with grapefruit juice. So that would be like the perfect. And then lunch would be tacos, kind of any kind, like, but just delicious tacos with some really good hot sauce, like really great fresh salsa and a mezcal margarita or three. Something like that.
It's your perfect day. So
yeah, I mean, if it's my perfect day. Yeah. And that would be, you know, obviously with friends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tacos with friends somewhere and some margaritas. And then would be like, okay, have my day. And then now we start with a Negroni before dinner.
Okay.
So definitely a Negroni before dinner. And then dinner would be like light. I love like a beautiful white fish. Halibut is probably my favorite, over some braised like Italian butter beans, some fennel. By the way, that's on my menu. It's one of my
favorite
dishes. But something in that, you know, with like a bright, you know, herbed pistou, like just really clean glass of Chenin Blanc. Ugh, one of my favorites. And then I'm not a huge dessert eater. So I would say like, I want a bite of something and it needs to have like a salty sour. So like my favorite dessert, if I had to pick one, would be like a blackberry crisp or crumble.
Okay.
Because I like a little bit of salty in the crust and then like real tart, but a little bit sweet. then we would finish with an old fashioned. Because like, I'm from Wisconsin. So, you know, everybody loves a good old fashioned, although those are not great in Wisconsin. But in any case, that would be my nightcap, would be a delicious old fashioned.
I love it. I love that there is a specific cocktail for every portion of the day.
Of course.
That's very perfect. And thank you so much for taking the time and again, continued success on all of your endeavors.
Thank you so much. It was such an honor to be here and I look forward to seeing you more.
You can watch Tournament of Champions Sundays at 8 p.m. on Food Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.